Chapter 40. Second First Person. Yacht Choice of Famed Literary Detective, a Mystery. Article in Yachting Monthly, July 1988. The shooting of Thursday Next last Saturday leaves the question of her favourite yacht unanswered, our Swindon correspondent writes. From the look of her, I would expect a 32-foot ketch, spinnaker-rigged, and with a Floon automatic pilot. Other yachting commentators disagree and think she would have gone for something larger, such as a sloop or yawl, although it is possible she might only have wanted a boat for coastal day work or a long weekend, in which case she might have gone for a compact 20-footer. We asked her husband to comment on her taste in sailing, but he declined to give an answer. I was watching her, right up to the moment she was shot. She looked confused and tired as she walked back from the penalty, and the crowd roared when I shouted to get her attention, so she didn't hear me. It was then that I saw a man vault across the barrier and run up to her. I thought it was a nutty fan or something, and the shot sounded more like a firecracker. There was a puff of blue smoke, and she looked incredulous for a moment, and then she just crumpled up and collapsed on the turf. As simple as that. Before I knew what I was doing, I had handed Friday to Joffy and jumped over the barrier, moving as fast as I could. I was the first one to reach Thursday, who was lying perfectly still on the muddy ground, her eyes open, a neat red hole 2 inches above her right eye. Someone yelled, "Medic!" It was me. I switched to automatic. For the moment, the idea that someone had shot my wife was expunged from my mind. I was simply dealing with a casualty, and heaven knows I've done that often enough. I pulled out my handkerchief and pressed it on the wound. I said, "Thursday, can you hear me?" She didn't answer. Her eyes were unblinking as the rain struck her, and I placed my hand above her head to shield her. A medic appeared at my side, sloshing down into the muddy ground in his haste to help. He said, "What's happened?" I said, "He shot her." I reached gingerly around the back of her head and breathed a small sigh of relief when I couldn't find an exit wound. A second medic, a woman this time, joined the first and told me to step aside. But I moved only far enough for her to work. I took hold of Thursday's hand. The first medic said, "I've got a pulse," as he unwrapped an airway, then added, "Where's the blasted ambulance?" I stayed with her all the way to the hospital and let go of her hand only when they took her into the operating theatre. A friendly casualty nurse at St. Septic said, "Here you go," as she gave me a blanket. I sat on a hard chair and stared at the wall clock and the public information posters. I thought about Thursday, trying to figure out how much time we'd spent together. Not long for 2.5 years, really. A boy next to me with his head stuck in a saucepan said, "What you in here for, mister?" I leaned closer and spoke into the hollow handle so he could hear me and said, "I'm okay, but someone shot my wife." The little boy with his head stuck in a saucepan said, "Bummer." And I replied, "Yes, bummer." I sat and looked at the posters again for a long time until someone said, "London." I looked up. It was Mrs. Next. She'd been crying. I think I had too. She said, "How is she?" And I said, "I don't know." She sat down next to me. "I brought you some Battenberg." I said, "I'm not really that hungry." "I know, but I just don't know what else to do." We both stared at the clock and the posters in silence for some minutes. After a while I said, "Where's Friday?" Mrs. Next patted my arm.
"With Joffy and Miles."
"Ah," I said. "Good." Thursday came out of surgery 3 hours later. The doctor, who had a haggard look but stared me in the eye, which I liked, told me that things weren't terrific, but she was stable and a fighter, and I wasn't to give up hope. I went to have a look at her with Mrs. Next. There was a large bandage around her head, and the monitors did that beep thing they do in movies. Mrs. Next sniffed and said, "I've lost one son already. I don't want to lose another. Well, a daughter, I mean. But you know what I mean, a child." I said, "I know what you mean." I didn't, having never lost a son, but it seemed the right thing to say. We sat with her for 2 hours while the light faded outside and the fluorescence flickered on. When we'd been there another 2 hours, Mrs. Next said, "I'm going to go now, but I'll be back in the morning. You should try and get some sleep." I said, "I know. I'm just going to stay here for another 5 minutes." I stayed there for another hour. A kindly nurse brought me a cup of tea, and I ate some Battenberg. I got home at 11. Joffy was waiting for me. He told me he'd put Friday to bed, and asked me how his sister was. I said, "It's not looking very good, Joff." He patted me on the shoulder, gave me a hug, and told me that everyone at the GSD had joined the Idolatry Friends of St. Zivilkicks and the Sisters of Eternal Punctuality to pray for her, which was good of him, and them. I sat on the sofa for a long time, until there was a gentle knock at the kitchen door. I opened it to find a small group of people, a man who introduced himself as Thursday's Cousin Eddie, but whispered that actually his name was Hamlet, said to me, "Is this a bad time? We heard about Thursday and wanted to tell you how sorry we were." I tried to be cheery. I really wanted him to sod off, but instead I said, "Thank you. I don't mind at all. Friends of Thursday are friends of mine. Tea in Battenberg? If it's not too much trouble." He had three others with him. The first was a short man who looked exactly like a Victorian big game hunter. He wore a pith helmet and safari suit and had a large bushy white moustache. He gave me his hand to shake and said, "Commander Bradshaw, don't you know? Damn fine lady, your wife. Appreciate a girl who knows how to carry herself in a scrape. Did she tell you about the time she and I hunted Morlock in Trollope?"
"No."
"Shame. I'll tell you all about it one day. This is the Mem Sahib, Mrs. Bradshaw."
Melanie was large and hairy and looked like a gorilla. In fact, she was a gorilla. But she had impeccable manners and curtsied as I shook her large coal-black hand, which had the thumb in an odd place, so it was difficult to shake properly. Her deep-set eyes were wet with tears, and she said,
"Oh, Landon, can I call you Landon? Thursday used to talk about you all the time when you were eradicated. We all loved her a great deal. I mean, we still do. How is she? How is Friday? You must feel awful."
I said, "She's not really very well," which was the truth. The third member of the party was a tall man, dressed in black robes. He had a very large bald head and high arched eyebrows. He put out a finely manicured hand and said, "My name's Jacques, but you can call me Horace. I used to work with Thursday. You have my condolences. If it will help, I would happily slaughter a few thousand thralls as a tribute to the gods." I didn't know what a thrall was, but told him it really wasn't necessary. He said, "It's really no trouble. I've just conquered their planet, and I'm not sure what I should do with them." I told him that this really, really wasn't necessary, and added that I didn't think Thursday would have liked it, then cursed myself for using the past tense. I put on the kettle and said, "Battenberg?" Hamlet and Jacques answered together. They were obviously quite keen on my mother-in-law's speciality. I smiled for the first time in 8 hours and 23 minutes and said, "There's plenty for everyone. Mrs. Next keeps on sending it over, and the dodos won't touch it. You can take away a cake each." I made the tea. Mrs. Bradshaw poured it, and there was an uncomfortable silence. Jacques asked if I knew where Handley Page lived, but the big game hunter gave him a stern look and he was quiet. They all talked to me about Thursday and what she had done in the fictional book world. The stories were all highly unbelievable, but I didn't think to question any of them. I was glad for the company and happy to hear about what she'd been doing over the past 2 years. Mrs. Bradshaw gave me a rundown of what Friday had been up to as well, and even offered to come and look after him whenever I wanted. Jacques was more interested in talking about Handley, but still had time to tell me a wholly unbelievable story about how he and Thursday dealt with a Martian who had escaped from the War of the Worlds and turned up in the Wind in the Willows. "It's a W thing," he explained. "In the titles, I mean. Wind, War, Worlds, Willows. They are so similar that..." Bradshaw nudged him to be quiet. They left 2 hours later, slightly full of drink and very full of Battenberg. I noticed the tall one in the black cloak had riffled through my address book before he left, and when I looked, he had left it open on Handley's address. I returned to the living room and sat on the sofa until sleep overcame me. I was wakened by Pickwick wanting to be let out, and Alan wanting to be let in. The smaller Dodo had some paint spilled on him, smelt of perfume, had a blue ribbon tied around his left foot, and was holding a mackerel in his beak. I have no idea to this day what he'd been getting up to. I went upstairs, checked that Friday was sleeping in his cot, then had a long shower and a shave.